Imagine sleeping in the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's iconic sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. So start getting your best night's sleep in sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. And you can try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee plus 15% off your first order with code Odyssey. So head to B-O-L-L and Branch.com today. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
You could spend the weekend doing the same old whatever, or you could conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
Welcome to the Power Cat Podcast, presented by Fridge Wholesale Liquor. Now let's go to the rolling Flint Hills, home of the Cats and Dogs studio. Here's your host, Tim Fitzgerald.
Welcome to another edition of the Power Cat Podcast. Tim Fitzgerald, Zach Carlson in the Cats and Dogs studio, and Ryan Gilbert in his luxurious private studio space in Aggieville. Gils, am I overselling that a little bit?
Spot on. It's luxurious.
It's going to start over again. Yeah. It's everything about it was true, except the luxurious part. You're just a man in a corner talking to a computer. That's what you are.
Pretty much. Yeah,
we're sponsored by Fridge Wholesale Liquor. Make sure you check out the fridge whenever you're in town, and you should be coming to town next Saturday. Not this upcoming Saturday, next Saturday, when Kansas State closes out its regular season against the Iowa State Cyclones. It could be a pretty interesting addition of the basketball side of Farmageddon. Little tensions from maybe left over. I think K-State's moved on. Iowa State will never forget. They'll never give it up. But it's going to be an interesting end to the season, and you need the fridge to get you through it. Check it out at the corner of this and that in the town in which we live. Great service, great selection, great people. They always got a good answer for you, the Fridge Wholesale Liquor.
So you're saying don't come this weekend to Manhattan for anything?
You can. I mean, when do the women play? I don't have the schedule right in front of me.
They're Texas Tech. Tonight's senior night.
Here's a good idea. Why don't you just come to Manhattan this weekend and watch the Cincinnati game at your favorite bar here in Manhattan. In fact, go to Ryan Gilbert's luxurious Aggieville studio space and tailgate. Just park out front.
And congregate.
Congregate. Yes. Yeah. Great numbers. Is that this weekend?
Yeah. You blew it.
I didn't even know it was this weekend.
You blew it.
Oh my gosh.
I was trying to lead you into it and you didn't want to go on a fake Patty's Day rant.
It's kind of weird not to have a home game. It's overlapped a lot more than it hasn't. I remember the year that they played Baylor and the students showed up wearing green Big Patty's Day shirts.
That was funny.
Yeah. And why don't you come to town and just observe the arrests, because the police are making it very clear you cannot have fun. You can't. You can't
have a pretty good view from my apartment.
That's true. Five or more people, you could get arrested, which doesn't seem constitutional to me, but hey. Anyhow, I'll fight that battle another day. We're going to get into your questions from Wabash Station. If you're new to this thing we do, we've been doing for, I don't know, 15 years, you get to ask questions at Wabash Station. We answer here on the podcast. Everyone gets to listen and now watch. I don't know why you'd want to watch this. My shirt's rather distracting today, but it is from that brand that sponsors the daily delivery.
The Pixels hate it.
No, that's an old, that doesn't happen that way.
Pretty sure.
Yeah. Okay. Well, it might happen on these switching definition cameras. Oh, we're going to go 1080p. Now we're at 42. Anyhow, let's get going with your questions from Wabash Station. Zach Carlson, take it away.
From Cat in Colo.
Hello.
The Cincinnati game is this Saturday, and is it truly a do or die game for the NCAA tournament? Win there, and there's at least a chance. If you lose, there's no realistic path. Do you all agree?
No, I don't, but it's the easiest path at this point is to win at Cincinnati. I just said on radio, I think they need three more wins. And so if you accomplish Cincinnati and defend your home court with Iowa State, you got KU in between, which seems a little more tangible, or does it, after they stunk it up against BYU. They got to get Kevin McCullough back, and we'll see if he does come back soon. But and then win one in Kansas City. The good news is the key really for the Cincinnati game is it guarantees you that you're not going to be playing on the first day of the Big 12 tournament. There's now a 2-game gap between K-State and Cincinnati, so you don't want to, you know, give it right back. They've got some space there. They're clearly above the bottom four, which are Cincinnati, UCF, West Virginia, and Oklahoma State. And those will be the teams playing on the first day. And the good news with that is then if you need to get a win in Kansas City, if you're the seventh seed, you're going to be playing the 10th seed. So you'll be playing a team that didn't get a bye either, but is kind of equivalent worth. The 8-9 will play each other on that day too. So there's not opportunities there, but it is a lot easier with a win over Cincinnati. You don't want to go to Kansas City having to win 2 or even 3 games, because if you win 3, you probably just went to the NCAA tournament anyhow.
Yeah, Fitz, you kind of said it best. Ideally, you probably would want to beat Cincinnati, beat Iowa State here in Manhattan, pick up that win in Kansas City. I 100% agree that 3 wins, no matter how you get them or who they're against, right? 3 wins from here to the end of until Selection Sunday, that's probably going to be good enough to get you in. But with Cincinnati, to answer the question, no. Like Cincinnati, they're all going to be quad one games, right? Cincinnati, right. KU, and Iowa State. Those are going to be quad one victories if you can pick them up. But guys, let's be honest, a win over Cincinnati, just in terms of like the eye test and, you know, the committee's going to look at, you know, these fine, you know, details, a win over Cincinnati is not nearly as important as a win over a team like Iowa State or Kansas, right? So you don't have to win this game, but I think it's the easiest path, maybe best case scenario for K-State. You pick up the road win and then you want to split 1 of 2. And probably you're going to lose in Allen Fieldhouse, and you're hoping to beat Iowa State inside of Bramlage. And then, yeah, go to Kansas City and pick up one. And so it's key to not be playing on that first day for a number of reasons. But most importantly, a win over UCF or West Virginia on that first day does nothing for your resume. And then the next day you're playing more depleted, more fatigued against a team that's, you know, has more rest. And so, you know, beating Cincinnati is key. It's very important, but it's not going to define the season for Kansas State if you lose.
No, they've kind of taken it to the end here, Zach. They've got no room here. They got to take care of business.
I agree. It's not do or die, but if they lose, I think you do have to go to KU and win that game. I mean, I don't see a path. I don't see a path where K-State loses at Cincinnati and then loses to KU and then somehow makes the NCAA tournament. Winning a game in Kansas City, beating Iowa State. I get that those are backwards how I listed them, but you got to get a win in Kansas City. And if they lose to Cincinnati, they lose to KU. If you beat Iowa State, I don't know, you still might be playing Tuesday, and you need to get 2 wins. And maybe that looks a little better, but you can't just rely on a Tuesday win if you want to be in the tournament. You got to be a top 10 team, and that's the starting point. And we'll get into it too with the next question. But you got to at least be 9-9.
Let's go to the next question.
From Came to Elevate, every Big 12 team that has gone at least 500 in conference play has made the NCAA tournament in recent memory. Why wouldn't this team make it as well with a 9-9 record in what is considered the toughest conference in the country?
That's Coach Tang's point. That is exactly his argument in summary. But does it work for K-State because of the non-conference? Because some of the losses we thought were good losses are actually really bad losses. USC is a horrible loss. I can't believe the team I saw in Vegas is that bad, because they got some dudes. So it comes down to locker room and coaching for me. They've got guys. They could be playing at a high level and they're not. And I don't know. I mean, I just think there's some flaws in the resume that go beyond the non-conference or go beyond the conference schedule that are worrisome. I'm looking at how everyone who does brackets, and let's be honest, Joey Brackets gets information sent to him. And I think if K-State does win 2 out of 3 here in the regular season, you will see everyone have K-State at least in on the bubble, very close to the last 4 in, or they will be in. And the problem with that is, yeah, you might be in Dayton. That's what K-State's looking at. If they get in, they're going to be in Dayton for one of those first 4 games. And we'll see if that, that's, I hate that, but at least you're in the field. Maybe they'll book him for Dayton, and then, you know, like Rome would be the next round. Maybe sub-Saharan Africa. They'll have to fly that overnight and play.
Hopefully it's Pittsburgh or Indianapolis.
Yes, I would agree with
hopefully.
That.
Fitz, you mentioned the resume. Like, real quick, if you're a K-State fan listening, you want to be rooting for Providence and Villanova from now until Selection Sunday. Make those wins look as good as possible, because the Friars and the Wildcats of Villanova are both on the bubble right now. And so, obviously, like, if it's a coin flip between one of those two teams, K-State's going to have the edge, right? Because probably head-to-head, but that's not going to happen. Like, there's so many other factors. But what I'm saying here, you want to root for those teams. Make those wins look as good as possible. But to the question, the factor, the statistic mentioned, right, I just don't know how important that really is right now, because the Big 12, this is the first year with it being 14 teams. Now, you look at however many years it was with 10 teams, okay, the Big 12 could send 7-8 teams, right? And getting 500 is going to be, you know, more than enough to get you into the tournament, right? But now we'll see what the committee thinks. Does it change things when you have, you know, I've always said that the Big 12 is deep. You know, we saw that on Monday with West Virginia. That being said, you know, West Virginia and UCF, those wins this year, I don't know how much, like TCU, when the Horned Frogs first joined the conference, they were bad, but they got so much better over the years. And like a year here, a year there, there's going to be teams that are just bad. But by and large, the Big 12 was always just so deep, top to bottom. Yeah. And that's why I think that statistics holds true. And so I don't know what the committee's going to think of a team that goes 9-9 with the best non-conference resume, the worst non-conference resume. We'll have to wait and see on Selection Sunday what the committee thinks and if making that 9-9 is just a magical mark that you have to get to or not.
See, I think K-State's biggest problem right now is they lost to OU and they lost to Texas. And those are the two teams in the standings. If you're the committee, or if you're someone, you know, you're in the media and you're looking at, well, how does the Big 12 conference stack up? There's potential for 3 9-9 teams there, you know, maybe a little better, maybe a little worse. But at a certain point, you go down the line in the Big 12 and you say, that is the line. Those are tournament teams. Those are NIT teams, or those are not playing in March, you know, because they're either looking for a new coach or whatever else. But I think that K-State, you know, if they would have won one of those two games head to head, I think K-State would probably be squarely in right now as far as the tournament picture. But they had that long stretch where they just weren't winning games. And the perception of K-State was pretty bad for a time. But, you know, as we've seen, you know, and like you said about, you know, Lenardi getting info as we get closer to Selection Sunday, it is about the whole body of work. And, you know, you're when they're making these projections, it's not just him, it's everybody. You know, they're looking, well, what have you done for me lately? But at a certain point, late February, early March, you are starting to look at the whole body of work. And you look at K-State on paper, 7-8. That's not a bad season in the Big 12 by any stretch.
No.
When you look at it, they started 4-1 and they went on this slide to get to 7-8. You know, it's kind of like how what happened on Monday. They looked great for most of 30 minutes or so. And you're like, this is a great team. And then they threw it all away and barely made it to overtime to win the game.
It's their whole season in
one
game.
That is
what their season has.
That is this, you know, what K-State's season has been. So, you know, I think as we get closer to Selection Sunday, I think that, you know, that late January, early February slide isn't going to be as important as it felt. I mean, just a week ago, all of the questions were about the NIT.
Right.
And now we've completely done a 180 after winning two games. So, you know, I think we probably are all guilty of not being a little patient here, but the task that K-State has is still pretty difficult. And if they pass the test over the next three games, you know, they're going to earn it. You know, they earned that spot in the NCAA tournament, but they have some tough games ahead.
Well, if you go back a couple weeks ago, we were looking at Texas as a more tangible road win than Cincinnati. Now Texas has taken off. They just kicked Texas Tech's butt last night in Lubbock, up and down.
Literally.
Yeah. I mean, and then they got into fights and and a guy with a mullet got kicked out of the stadium and hauled out by police. It was a beautiful mullet.
That.
Oh my gosh.
I mean, watching the game.
The guy went, I'd like to know what he did. If it was just yelling at a player or throwing stuff on the court, because that was going on, but he got his ass hauled out by about six officers who carried him out. And he was yelling horns down the entire time, becoming a hero to the entire conference. But and Cincinnati is just in the tank. That is such a tangible opportunity for Kansas State. They just can't blow that. They just got to go take advantage of it. And, you know, it's right there in front of them. We'll see if they do it.
I'd have to crunch the numbers on Cincinnati, but I'm sure the Cincinnati Bearcats 24/7 podcast is saying win three games in a row and catch fire. You know, the season's not completely over right now. My point here is that this is, you know, we talk about it being maybe a do or die game for K-State or not. You know, Cincinnati season isn't over, but they need a win, you know, right now. So it's going to be a game with a high sense of urgency, which I know we don't talk about like specific, you know, games and X's and O's on here, but, you know, K-State has to lock in here because I would expect a pretty dang good effort from Cincinnati.
I would agree. Totally.
Next question is from Jim Cat. Fitz, go last on this since you did the DD on this today, but Jim Cat asks, I like Jerome Tang and hope he stays. However, did his calling out the students for not being there sound like the end of Bruce Weber's run when he was complaining that the fans complaining were the problem? Gilson.
So Bruce Weber didn't do anything for the fans, though. Like, I don't think Bruce Weber even has an Instagram account and reposting things.
He bought pizza.
Okay, he brought pizza. I mean, when I was a student, I had Xavier Sneed coming out and give me donuts for a game when I was camped out. I'll give him that. But no, I mean, but we can all agree, guys, that was the worst Big 12 crowd that we've ever seen under Drum Tang. Guys, that might have been the worst crowd of the season comparing it to Bellarmine or South Dakota State or any of those non-conference games, right? So Drum Tang is all right. Like, that was a very bad crowd, right? We can all agree on that, right? Now, it was a Monday, 6 o'clock game. Weather was nice outside. You know, traffic, all this stuff. Who knows why? But K-State's, you know, I think the biggest thing, though, is just when you're not winning, people don't show up. Right? Like Bruce Weber, when his, you know, first season, right, his Big 12 championship season the second time in 2019, you know, that place was rocking, right? And when you lose, you start to, you know, not come out on top. People don't show up. I think that's just kind of natural. And so I don't have a problem with Tang, man. Like, it's a two-way relationship, right? Like, Jerome Tang, I think I said this a month or two ago. I think I said it after the Nebraska loss at home. Like, Jerome Tang can beg and, you know, all these fans to show up, but if it's a bad result and you're not winning, well, then I don't know if you can really blame them for not showing up. But K-State's now won two in a row, right? They're back on, like, especially coming up against Iowa State. This is going to be Tyler Perry's last go around. This is his last time at home ever wearing that purple jersey. Wouldn't you want to be there and support them? I think that's kind of what Jerome Tang is saying here. Like, you know, K-State's on the bubble. You know, that home court advantage, it matters when Bramwich is rocking. And Bramwich was not rocking at all against West Virginia. Obviously, they come out on top, and, you know, it is what it is. But that's a long-winded answer. So I see both sides here, but two things can be true. Like, you don't have to just have a strong stance one way or another, right? You know, the crowd was bad. Jerome Tang wants you to come. Jerome Tang helps you out. Like he said, he goes to fraternities and sororities. He reposts stuff. You know, he gives out his flipping phone number for crying out loud.
Right.
I think the least that he wants is people to show up in return.
Yeah, I think a lot of it is Jerome Tang has a lot of ownership when it comes to being available to the students.
Right.
And he makes himself available. Like you said, the phone number, you know, being invited to events to come speak, come hang out. He's very visible, and it's a good thing for K-State. What he is and what he's meant over the last 2 years now, it's been incredible. But at the same time, I think that it is a two-way relationship here. If he's going to be doing this and putting in all this effort for the students and being there and being available, the students absolutely owe it to Jerome Tang to show up. I mean, plain and simple, Jerome Tang has done so much in such little time. The least you can do is show up. Yeah, it was a Monday night. It was 6 p.m. Yes, the number of students were there. Half the Big 12 would love that number of students that were there. Oklahoma State, Texas Tech, maybe not Texas Tech right now, but Oklahoma State, Baylor, TCU, UCF, they would kill for the number of students that were in attendance on Monday night. So don't get me wrong, K-State has a great student section, and even on Monday night, to Big 12 standards, was still very quality. But with the number of tickets that are available for, I mean, they were still tweeting out mid-afternoon, hey, claim your ticket, you can still come to the game. Like, there were student tickets still available that afternoon for students. So I just, it was a bad performance by the students showing up, plain and simple.
I'm going to reiterate something Gil said. If they had lost Saturday and looked bad, or even looked, you know, had the West Virginia type performance where they won, but it wasn't real pretty, I could see a reaction from fans like, okay, I'm not going back next Monday night. But they played maybe their best game of the season, and to come back and have just so many open seats. And Jerome Tang's point is this, it goes back to what Zach just said. K-State students show up in such large numbers. They have more seats than almost anywhere else in the Big 12, maybe the nation. They have five sections that can be filled by students, five. His point is you get the five sections, including KU and other big games, because you fill up the middle three sections. But if you're not going to fill those up, Kansas State Athletics can make a lot more money by selling tickets in those other two sections to the public. They don't make much money at all, if at all, off students. They're just not, the money's not there. And so to be able to sell those for $25 a piece to the public would be more profitable for athletics. But the students have done things to earn that. And Jerome Tang is working incredibly hard to keep the students engaged. And so, yeah, he was frustrated when he looked up and there was, right at the start of the game. I'm going to defend him in this. It did fill in. Before tip-off, it was awful. It was about 50% full, maybe 60% full in those main three sections. It filled up quite a bit. Maybe it just spread out and looked more full. But he always says what's on his mind. Does that get him in trouble at times? Yeah. Look back at the Iowa State game. Look back at criticizing an official. And maybe that's just something he's going to have to learn that, I really believe this, but I'm not going to say it right now. I'm going to find a different time. But I was disappointed in the overall crowd. And I know 6 o'clock on a Monday night, right after a Saturday game, it's just not easy for people coming in anywhere beyond an hour away. Salina and Topeka, you're still pushing it if you've got a job. You got to get off work early. And anywhere farther, like Kansas City or Wichita, you're not making. I mean, you got to basically take almost your whole afternoon off to get up there in time. And that just doesn't happen for everyone. So the students, though, they're right here. And he did recognize that there were midterms, but not that many midterms. But I'll go back to this. Earlier in the season, before they played Kansas, I can't even tell you how many times, because Gills and Cole and Goins and less Zach, because he didn't sit up there with me. I show up right for the game. I mean, sometimes I wander in 10 minutes before the game, 30 minutes before the game. I've shocked people by being there an hour early. But when I would show up, when I'm coming in late, I am getting passed by student after student leaving because they checked in, they got their gift, and they went to Aggieville or back home or wherever. That's disgusting to me. That's almost stealing. The trade-off here is you come and support the team and you get this thing. You get this T-shirt, you get this hat, you get this whatever. And you show up and get your gift and then leave. I'm sorry, that says a lot about you. But the students are great. They're amazing. They just got to work on some of their excuses are pretty lame. I'm glad there's not a home game because there'd be a lot of students missing for Fake Patty's Day with what's going on, everything else connected to that event around town.
One point I want to make. The students, like from the university standpoint, there is no external fund or funding from the university to athletics. Athletics is completely independent.
Right.
And we love that. It's a great thing that the athletic department is fully sustained on external donations, television revenue, whatever else. They are not relying on the student body, so to speak, which makes it interesting because since they're not relying on the student body, them giving all these tickets away is a great gift. You know, when I say giveaway, these are very cheap tickets that the students have access to. I mean, at a certain point, there's no money interest from the university side. If you're a student paying student fees to go to the athletic department, at a certain point, if you don't start showing up, it's really easy to say, hey, we're an independent athletic department. We don't need to be giving you all these seats if you're not going to show up. We will sell these elsewhere. So I think that the students need to understand, if you like going to sporting events at Kansas State University, you need to support and use those tickets allocated, because those are very, you're very fortunate to have those, is the point I'm making. The university could absolutely limit the number of tickets and get away with it.
I agree. They really could. And here's one more thing, and I haven't even discussed this, and I haven't even brought this up to anyone within our, you know, our staff text messaging. There is apparently the naming rights have long since run out, so, which would also mean that the rights of the students as significant donors in the building of Bramlage Coliseum has also long expired, and that maybe they're looking at more ways to generate revenue off of Bramlage Coliseum. Maybe that's what Coach Tang's hinting about, because I'm told, I haven't verified this, but I'm told it won't be Bramlage Coliseum next year. It's going to be something else. It's going to be a naming rights. I don't think it's going to be a supermarket.
Darn.
I do have a feeling it's going to be an Irish theme investment company. That's just my gut feeling.
The Shamrock Center.
I would hope they name it like the Shamrock Octagon of Doom. I would just get rid of Coliseum.
Shamrock Octagon.
Ooh, I like it.
That's a little tongue twistery.
I like it. I like it a lot. That'd be good promo then for the sideline thing, the tongue twisters that you got to say over and over. But I think there's more at work here that we don't know about.
Last question of
Hey, hang on. I got one more comment about so Jerome Tang, you saw how good it could be against KU, right? It's, you know, Bramlage has been, it's the student section specifically, right? There's not an empty seat there, right? So Jerome Tang, I think the frustrating part for him, guys, KU's the biggest game of the year. West Virginia has 9 wins on the season. And so the frustrating part, and this, I don't know for a fact, but I would assume that, you know, he gets up on the scores table after they beat Kansas last year, and he says, you come to show up for your love of Kansas State, not about the opponent. Well, that's probably part of the frustrations for him, is that, you know, fans are showing up for the opponent. Like, if it's a better game, a marquee matchup, they're going to show up. Whereas Jerome Tang, he wants those fans to show up every game to support his players, regardless of who they're playing, right? So that's the last point I'll make, is that he wants these fans to show up not just for the KU game or whatever, but for every single game, especially a conference game.
K-State fans just love good Big 12 basketball. Big 12 basketball fans.
Mm-hmm.
Last question from KSU Trumpet. After watching K-State lose guys like Battle, Edwards, Asmus. Is that how you say it?
Asmus.
Okay, yeah. Asmus.
Yeah. Makes some sense.
To other teams because of NIL, and then see them perform well against K-State, does Jerome Tang have a war chest issue when it comes to recruiting? And is K-State doomed to see the struggles of this season without more financial support?
I think it's, from everything I'm hearing, it's been solved. I don't know that it was all NIL, though, on some of those guys. I mean, I think everyone just assumes, oh, we lost recruits NIL. You lost recruits before for other reasons. You could still lose for those reasons. Kids aren't just exclusively making their mind up for NIL reasons. Asmus probably was. It's Texas. They probably just flat out gave him an absurd amount of money. Imagine if he hadn't gone to Texas and had come to K-State, what would be the records of these teams? Well, I mean, Texas would have backfilled with someone else. K-State tried to backfill. He ended up at Texas Tech. Then they brought in Glover, who's been hurt. I don't know that it was all war chest, but the war chest is much healthier this time around. We'll see what impact it has.
I mean, I said this millions of times here on podcasts and, you know, radio, whatever I'm on. I say that Jerome Tang and Chris Kleiman, they don't want to recruit players that are just solely in Manhattan for the NIL, right? So you see how good Raekwon Battle can be, right? You see the highs of some of these players, but, you know, West Virginia is 9-20 or 9-19, whatever they are, right? Like, at the end of the day, like, you want winners, guys that are going to go out and compete, right? Like, and not just show their ceilings off for, you know, flashes, but to, you know, lock in consistently. And so my point here is just, you know, like Raekwon Battle, I'm not sure. I'd have to like go back and look at, you know, Gills's transfer portal notes from last offseason.
He wasn't really involved with K-State.
Yeah, I don't know how much K-State was interested. Yeah, I don't think there was much interest from Kansas State. Obviously, there was, you know, Max Asmus, they wanted him without a doubt. But like Edwards, you know, these guys were popping up on the boards and stuff. But just because, you know, some, you know, John Rothstein or someone links them to K-State, like this, you know, the hearing from this school, guys, I'm not sure how much that really means. So that's another sort of long-winded answer. Or not a long-winded answer, but that was just confusing, guys. I'm sorry. I'm off my game.
I know.
It's okay. I can't make a point, like a clear point. I've got to like ramble and rattle off a bunch of different words. But does that make? I mean, I don't know how much NIL really, you know, Asmus. That's a different story than probably every other guy that K-State went after.
well, with Battle, you would have had the eligibility issue.
That's what it was.
Yeah.
Let's get to that with Battle. Yeah. Folks, don't forget that Raekwon Battle wasn't eligible when he went to West Virginia. It took a court case playing out in a different area of the country to get him eligible because the judge said, no, you can't just arbitrarily make this rule now that they're not eligible after they've transferred. So they just avoided that. Because imagine that all going on too. Well, you would end up with Raekwon Battle, which doesn't suck. But they just kind of avoided that.
No. Yeah. I think the perception is, and I don't know if this is fact or if it's just kind of opinion that we've kind of come up with as K-Staters and people in the K-State media, but I get the sense that K-State is interested in NIL to a certain point. Each player has a certain point of value. And if they're a good kid and they're worth a certain amount, you know, they're willing to take them. But at a certain dollar amount, they're like, well, maybe he's not such a good kid and he's just about the dollars, you know? And I think that K-State had a ceiling on what their NIL to quality of the athlete and person that they were getting. And I think that their ceiling was a little too low on people that are otherwise good people, good athletes who are wanting to get their market value. Right. I think that now, as we've seen with this big push from Chris Klein and Jerome Tang, getting more support, you know, all the NILs consolidating into one. Can't think of what the word collective. The collective is one now, so there's a much better coordinated effort for NIL for K-State right now. That's great.
Yeah.
And I think that probably had a little bit to do with it in the past, but now I think that the coaches see what the market has been over the last year, and now they understand that they need to pay more, and they're not going to lose locker room, so to speak, bringing in guys that aren't of a certain quality as individuals. You know, they aren't necessarily chasing dollars, even though that dollar amount is just higher now. I think that was the biggest issue is, you know, if $200,000 is our max and after that, oh, they're just chasing the money. I don't think that that's necessarily the move that K-State can make right now. I think that getting more funding, being like, well, this guy's a $500,000 a year guy. You know, that doesn't mean he's a bad kid per se.
Right. Let's put it this way. You're looking for a home. You found a home you really like. It's listed for $450,000. So you offer $400,000 because that's what you think it's worth. Someone comes in and offers $475,000. So are they overpaying or did you underestimate the market? Now the move's up to you. Do you want to do 475 and see which offer they take, or you want to do 480 and, you know, take it up a little bit and see if that, and then they offer 500,000. Well, now are you really going to get into a bidding war? So there's a difference from between getting in a bidding war that you don't want to be in and just kind of misevaluating the value, the market value of whatever you're attempting to purchase or rent in the case of a player. And I think they might be a little more eager or open to coming back to that second bid rather than, now he's going back to them and now we got to do a third bid. They're not going to do that. And you know what? That tells you all you need to know. I feel the same way about coaches. If they're constantly trying to milk you for more and more money, at some point you got to say, no, we're done. This is what we're paying. And we'll see. I think they'll be more effective in that space. But again, We're seeing teams that used the NIL successfully a year ago struggle this year, Missouri and Arkansas included. And it's just going to be that way. That's the peril of trying to do too much in the portal space. Sometimes it'll work beautifully, and other times it just won't work at all. That's it for the first half of the Power Cap Podcast. We're sponsored by Fridge Wholesale Liquor. We'll be back on the other side with more of your questions from Wabash Station.
We'll be right back after these messages from our sponsors.
Please visit the Fridge Wholesale Liquor, located at the corner of Claflin and Westport Road in Manhattan, Kansas.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is here to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify is got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 15% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. And Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning 24/7 help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odyssey podcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odyssey podcast now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/odyssey podcast.
Welcome back to the show. Let's return to the Cats and Dogs studio.
Welcome back to the Power Cat Podcast. Tim Fitzgerald, Zach Carlson here in the Cats and Dogs studio. Ryan Gilbert somewhere. Somewhere. We think he's at home. We said he was at home. He might be in the basement of Taco Lucha. I don't know.
Who told you?
I know. You just set up your studio there. That's what's going on. That's why the reception. Sometimes you freeze like you did just now, perfectly on time. That was beautifully executed. We're sponsored by The Fridge. Make sure you stop into The Fridge whenever you're in town. Football season isn't that far away. I want you to start thinking about ways you can access The Fridge to better enhance your tailgate. That was a really bad read. On with your questions from Wabash Station, Zach Carlson. What do we got now?
We got some football and some other stuff. No basketball.
Okay, so Gills, you get to take a breath. Okay.
Breathe. From Kevin 316, spring football practice starts next week. What positions or players do you plan on watching the closest when practices are open to the media?
You really need to ask what player we're going to watch the closest.
I'm going to watch all of them because I'm trying to get as much video and photos as possible in the 15 minutes that they let us in there.
In all honesty, I'll watch that offensive line quite a bit. I want to see how they're using the defensive line differently. They're talking about maybe some four-man fronts in certain situations, but also going to a bigger end in other situations, like Jonathan Banks moving out to end more than just playing over the tackle, or excuse me, over the center. So those type of things will jump out at me. Receiver rotations, you know, those things will be. I'm really concerned about. I don't know. I think this team's going to be pretty good, but I think the concern will be trying to figure out all those interior spots of that offensive line and who all's going to step up, who's going to play center and who's going to fill the guard spots. And they actually turned out, they returned quite a bit of number of guys that have some experience. So it's not as bad as what we thought it would be, but they got to get their depth rebuilt and all that. So that's really kind of where my focus is.
I'm with you, Fitz. I think it's offensive line. Yeah. That's the first thing I want to see is what five guys are lined up together, seemingly in what will be the first team unit. I don't know if we're going to see them taking snaps. Sometimes they'll let us in there and they'll be running some 11 on 11. Usually it's just drills, but usually you can, even from the drills, you can tell, okay, that's a guy, that's a guy, that's a guy. That's probably the unit. But then again, who knows how they're going to, you know, order up in their drills. It may not mean anything. So yeah. Until we can see a little bit of 7-on-7, or at least you know, them playing 11 guys out there together to run through some drills. We're not really going to know. But, yeah, I think that offensive line is the big question mark there.
Gills?
I've heard that that Avery Johnson dude's got a chance to be maybe a starting quarterback for this team. I'll have my eyes locked in to see if he's on first or second team reps.
What was that name again? I got to write that down. Amy? No.
Nah, you guys hit it on the head. And specifically, I think offensive line's an area to look at.
We're all going to watch Avery Johnson. And part of what I want to see from Avery is that there was a photo of him, maybe it was video, working out with Coach True and, you know, on the field. He looked big, guys, compared to what he was just a year ago. He looks dramatically changed. And he's going to need that bulk, particularly his legs and, you know, that upper body to take some of the hits you're going to absorb as any quarterback in the Big 12, let alone one who's going to run the ball.
I said that as a joke, but I'm sitting here thinking, like, I actually am excited to see, like, quarterback's the leader of the football team, right? No matter what level, what, you know, team. So is he going to be that outspoken guy? Like last year, you know, we were in the practice facility and Will Howard was, you know, talking to his team and stuff. Like, you need that from Avery Johnson, but, you know, is it natural or is it forced, right? So I think Avery Johnson is a leader. Yeah. But
that's one of the things they rave about. He's just, even his dad talks about, he's just calm and rational and, you know, a good leader. And he says things that he believes in and sets an example. And he's, you know, his pops has always said, he's mature beyond his years and he handles things much differently than most teenagers.
Yeah. Blake Barnett is on campus, correct?
Yes. Blake Barnett's on campus. He might be in a boot forever.
I'm going to take a picture of him and use it on one of the stories because everybody loves clicking on the backup quarterback.
That's true. You might want to get a few of Jacob Cahoon because he's actually the backup.
But it's not often.
Excuse me.
It's not often for a, you know, a true sophomore to be in that situation. But I think if there's one player on that roster who's ready to be that leader, it's Avery Johnson.
Agreed.
Next question is from Call Me T22. One betting service that may not be on the shores of the United States gives K-State a 66% chance to make the playoffs next year. How many wins will it take to get in as an at-large team in the 12-team playoff?
Well, I think you got to be 10, 9 for sure, but I think in the Big 12.
9 wins?
To get in as an at-large?
Yeah, in the Big 12? You think 9 would do it?
In some years. I'm thinking 10 for sure.
Really?
Yeah, 10 for sure.
Oh, I think you got to get, I think 10 minimum.
Well, I mean, I'm just saying, I see some years where 9 will get you in. Of course, I mean, if 9 includes, well, it was about at large bid, so never mind. But yeah, I think the Big 12 will consistently get two teams in. And those odds also showed that K-State and Utah would be the two included from the Big 12 in the 12-team field. And almost all the odds indicate K-State and Utah will play for the Big 12 championship, which brings up the interesting question. If K-State or Utah is at 9 wins, maybe even 10 wins going into that game, and there's someone behind them at 9 wins that didn't get into the game, do they sneak in over the loser of the title game because they just picked up a loss? So that'll be the first test for how the committee is going to treat losing in your title game. Do you really punish teams for being in the title game as opposed to not being in it? It'll be an interesting question that the committee needs to come up with. But I think on the regular, you'll see two Big 12, two ACC, and, you know, the one non-power champion. And then you'll see other 7 spots divvied up between the SEC and Big 10. But I'm going to be honest here. I have problems getting to 3 teams from the Big 10 some years, but bringing in the teams they brought in. The Big 10 actually really helped themselves. They needed some more quality. They had an elite upper crust with Michigan, Ohio State, and then Penn State kind of below them. But now Oregon and Washington offer maybe that same kind of competitive level at that very top end. And maybe USC, if Lincoln Riley learns that, you got to play defense, Lincoln. You need defense too. There, I just give some free coaching to a coach.
Looking at polls right now because I want to see how many teams had 10 wins or more. So, okay, so the top 12 last year all had 10 wins or more in the college football playoff rankings, that final rankings that they used before. Obviously, OU was the 12th team. They did not get in because the highest ranked group of five school, right, Liberty, gets that 12th spot. I can't imagine there being a scenario where there isn't enough 10-win teams, especially in the Big Ten, now that they've added all of those really good Pac-12 schools. Mm-hmm. I can't imagine a scenario where the Big Ten doesn't get three in any given year. And the SEC's at least two per year, maybe three. I think that the Big Ten, by adding the schools that they did, they're probably the best conference in the country.
I don't agree with that still. I think there's a lot more easy wins in the Big Ten.
Oh, yes. I agree with that. I think
winning nine in the SEC is much more notable than winning nine in the
Big Ten. I don't disagree, but I think that when you have the number of schools that will be 9 or 10 wins, and especially 10 wins, I think you'll see three teams in the Big Ten making the playoff year after year. You probably have three in the SEC, and that leaves, what, six spots for ACC, Big 12, and then whatever else is there. You know, I mean, I think it's going to be really tough to get in as an at-large with nine wins. I think it'll be almost virtually impossible. And 2022, I'm looking at 2022 right now. Washington was the 12th ranked team. Everybody above, they had 10 wins. Good. Everyone in the top 12 had 10. 2021, I got to select multiple things here.
What you're saying, though, is if it takes 10 wins in the regular season to get in, Iowa State's never making the playoff.
No. If you were interested, 2021, do you want to guess the number of teams in the top, however, that had 10 wins or more?
No, I don't want to guess.
It was 17 teams.
I'm
in
shocked.
2021 had 10 wins or more going into that final, going into Selection Sunday, basically.
Crazy.
Wake Forest had 10 wins.
Oh, yeah. Wake Forest.
It was Wake. I'm going from 17 up. Wake, Oklahoma, Iowa, Oregon, BYU, Pittsburgh, Utah, Michigan was 10th. So you had Oklahoma State, Ole Miss, Baylor, Ohio State, Notre Dame, Cincinnati, Georgia, Michigan, Alabama. Lots of new Big 12 schools in there.
Yeah.
So
I'll be intrigued to see how it all works out once you get a live season and, you know, where it takes us. And I also think it's going to make more games in the regular season meaningful. I mean, if you're Kansas State a year ago, even though you're outside of the, you know, Big 12 championship, that last game really has some meaning. Maybe you can sneak in with nine wins there. I don't know. So maybe we'll just see this impact the regular season. I think the long-term impact, if they keep it this way, of Big 12 teams making regular appearances will raise their profile quite a bit beyond, I've said this before, beyond just going to a New Year's Six Bowl. I think if you're constantly in the playoff, even if you're losing, people are still going to note that you're kind of hanging around with the big boys. If you can take the next step, it could be pretty significant.
Anything more, Gills?
Nope.
No. I'm just, you know, like you said, Fitz, I'm excited, really. Like, what was K-State's first loss was Oklahoma State on the road, right? Like, from that point on, getting to the college football playoff, now I hope Florida State fans aren't listening, but, like, you go undefeated, you're hoping you can get in, but that first loss, like, okay, that's kind of deflating. But now you have some wiggle room. You can drop a game here, you know, maybe struggle on the road and, you know, lose two games, but still have a good chance. But yeah, Zach, you mentioned the nine wins. You know, I think you got to get 10, right? Especially if you go 9-3, whatever. Now that, regardless of if Oklahoma and Texas were good or not, or their ranking was good, like, I think if you had those teams and you beat one of them, like, you can get in with nine. But now that they're gone, like, the committee is not going to view that win over Utah or whoever as important. Fitz, you're laughing at me?
No, I'm laughing. Daphne is giving me, like, the biggest doe eyes down here. Like, love me. And I'm like, I'm working. And she's like.
So I went back to 2019 is the earliest. The top 12 had a nine win team. But the 12-13 line, it was Auburn at 9-3. Alabama was 13, but they were 10-2. So I assume that Auburn beat Alabama that year. I'm not going to go back and look. But you also had Michigan at 9-3 and Notre Dame at 10-2 in your top 15. So I do not see a scenario where a 9-win team makes it in as an at-large, not only from the Big 12, but from the ACC or the Big 10, or from the SEC or the Big 10.
Interesting.
I don't think there is any way that we see a 9-win at-large team in the playoff. Maybe one in every 5 years.
Well, if the SEC had their way, 8 wins would get you in.
Like the only way, the only way a 9-win team is making this playoff is if they somehow, in a very off year in some conference, say the ACC, the second place team wins their championship game and they have 9 wins somehow. I think that's the only way a 9-win team makes a playoff.
Well, that would have been Kansas State a year ago.
Right. Well, they had 10 after.
They had 10 after
the championship.
Yep, that's right. Okay.
Next question is from Kaned. New Nike deal guarantee actual Nike gear, or is there a risk of being outfitted in Fanatics jerseys? And what he is referencing, if you are unaware, the MLB just redid all their materials for the 2024 season, and Nike is using a different material. But the biggest thing is the numerals and the nameplates and the logos, they're all different and they're all much smaller and they look very bad. It is very low quality. They aren't the same size. What I do find interesting, though, is last year, the Royals, they will be the only team of the 30. They are wearing the same size numerals and nameplates because they got an agreement with Nike and the MLB last year. I guess when they saw the test ones, they're like, no, we're not doing that. That looks bad. So like the Royals look good right now because they're wearing the same numerals and stuff from last year. They have the new fabrics, which the fabric isn't the issue here. It's what they look like. But anyway, that's the side rant of what K-Net is getting at here.
But no, what? Look, that's not going to happen. I mean, they've got to wear Nike. But let's keep in mind, Nike isn't some magical place where everything is made by magic elves in Portland. It's all coming out of Chinese manufacturing, and maybe they saved some money and went to a different manufacturer. I'm sure they've got their own facilities, but there's a lot of room in there to be outstanding or kind of mid. I don't know. I know it's all going to be Nike stuff, and there's not going to be any of that. In fact, the contract stipulates that you can't use other shoes. Like track guys can't use Asics, right?
Right.
They can't. They got to wear Nike.
Everyone has to use Nike. And to the point here is what Nike did was they told Fanatics to make all of the Nike gear, and it's a lesser product is what this MLB stuff is. So it's a little different.
See, that's what he's
asking.
They kind of sublicense out a lot of stuff.
Yeah, Nike will, and I think they've done this with BSN Sports. They make a lot of, they're licensed by Nike to make Nike stuff, essentially. So I don't know how much is genuine Nike gear, so to speak. I mean, Nike is such a big company, they can't possibly produce everything that they make.
Right.
There might be a swoosh on it. The tag might say Nike, but you can probably go to that factory and get the same blend of threads and put your own logo on it if you don't want, you know, a Nike shirt and you want it to say something else. I mean, it happened when in the NFL, when they switched from Reebok to Nike like 14 years ago or 12 years ago, whatever it was. I want to say the Packers were very adamant that they wanted the same jerseys. It was literally the same manufactured jersey, just with a Nike badge on it. So, you know, material stuff, I'm not really concerned there with what could happen with Nike. And I think going forward, I think you're going to see a very similar product that that Nike and K-State are putting out there.
Okay.
From Came to Elevate, last question of the podcast. Do the SEC and Big Ten quit scheduling Big 12 and ACC teams in football so there will be no data points to compare? Thus, the SEC and Big Ten can just say we are better and deserve most of the playoff spots.
Interesting. But they're going to create data points between the conferences. I mean, if you got the SEC getting their ass kicked by the Big Ten in non-conference games, either way, I think the Big 12 can benefit from this. I get your point totally. Kind of the reverse of what I've been saying. If they want to break off and do their own thing, say, well, we're never scheduling you in anything. You guys are in your own thing now. Go away. And I think at that point, the Big 12 and ACC or remnants of it, just take control of the NCAA and say, okay, you're no longer part of this organization, so we won't compete against you in anything, including the tournament, basketball tournament, or any other softball events. Or if you want your own thing, have fun. I don't know. Yeah. But I can see them doing stuff. Right now, the Big Ten and SEC are in a rut, I want to say, or maybe they're plotting and scheming to the point that anything that benefits them, they don't care about the consequences for everyone else or the sport or college athletics or the athletes, whatever makes them the most money. It's what we're seeing here is an absolutely disgusting money grab by two conferences that are, you know, clearly going to blow up something America loves just because they can make a buck off of it. But I think it's fool's gold. Eventually, if they ruin it, the money's going to go away.
Yeah, I think like what you said, I think if you just play each other and one conference starts dominating the other, they're not going to want to keep playing that same conference. I think that playing Big 12 and ACC schools kind of serves as that alternate data point to say, hey, we can play with everybody. It's not just these two. But if they, like you said, if they split off, you know, I can't imagine the rest of the NCAA institutions, if the Big Ten and the SEC do split off, to allow them to compete in the NCAA. I think that they truly will be cut off from the NCAA tournament, any NCAA championship. I don't see a reason, if these schools in football decide to go off on their own, to be able, you know, to be continued to allow, and how the institutions, you know, whatever they become. There's 18 teams in the Big Ten right now, 16 in the SEC. Those 34 schools, just eliminate them from the NCAA tournament and all of the other NCAA championships. Just get rid of them. And I think that the NCAA will be in a better place if that's how it continues to go. And I think that if that was what the consequences were for those two conferences, I think they would reconsider their positions in football. But I think at the end of the day, I think what's going to happen is you're going to have some of the bigger schools, the Big 12 and the ACC, say, hey, we want to be a part of that party that's not the NCAA. And, you know, when you look at how many more they might expand to, you know, they're at 34 right now. Maybe the number's 40, maybe the number's 48. Well, if you're K-State, maybe that puts you in a little bit of a bind. Which one do you want to be on? Because of the remaining non-Big Ten or SEC schools, if you're a school like K-State, you feel like you might be on the inside of that conversation and all of that extra money. So as much as, you know, from the K-State perspective that we want to talk here, and we want to save what college sports are as what they've been, it's really tempting to say, hey, we might be in this club, we probably want to be in that club. I think it's an interesting argument to make.
I would agree. Gills, anything?
Two words.
I agree.
You got it.
Okay. Boy, he's so talented. I'm telling you what, he's a keeper. That's it, right?
That's it.
That's it for this edition of the Power Cat Podcast. We'll see you next week, or you'll see us. How's that work? We don't actually see them.
Anyhow, we don't see them.
That's it. We're going away now. Have a great week and weekend. Cats and Bearcats on Saturday in Cincinnati.
This has been a GoPowerCat.com and Spirit Street production. Please support this show by subscribing to this YouTube channel or follow us on your favorite podcast platform.
Jeremy Renner returns to Paramount Plus for a brand new season of the original hit series, Mayor of Kingstown.
My job is to create a balance, avoid a war.
From executive producer Taylor Sheridan, co-creator of Yellowstone.
There's some new players in town, and they brought the plague.
And Antoine Fuqua, director of Training Day.
I know it's always been a war zone, Mike, but this is next level.
The mayor is back in business.
Are you warning me?
You're going to find out.
Mayor of Kingstown. New season streaming June 2nd, exclusively on Paramount Plus.
New CBS Monday.
NCIS! Here's where we can see them.
NCIS and NCIS Hawaii return with all new cases.
Double tap to the chest, one to the head.
These guys are professionals.
All new criminals.
Violent island, we got here.
Welcome to paradise.
And all new crimes to be solved.
If you're watching this, I've been arrested.
What are the charges?
Just one. Murder.
New NCIS and NCIS Hawaii. Monday, starting at 9, 8 central. On CBS and streaming on Paramount+.